And we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3451.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 3451 modifies the manner in which retirement credit is calculated under the Oregon Public Service Retirement Plan, otherwise known as OPSR, to equalize the current system that the retirement credit is accumulated under Tier 1 and Tier 2 members. And there's amendments forthcoming, which Jim Green will explain with the content.
Yes, Mr. Green, please, if you would.
Mr. Chair, if I could bring Steve Delaney.
Of course, Mr. Delaney is always welcome.
I thought his name was Mr. Kurz.
Don't you? He's a lucky devil.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jim Green with the Oregon School Boards Association, and today I'm also appearing on behalf of the PERS Employer Alliance, which includes League of Oregon City, Association of Oregon County, Special Districts Association. So we've got well over 1,000 employers that are looking at this issue. And while this sounds real simple, the reason the amendments are taking so long, I think Mr. Delaney may be able to walk you through that. And what I've handed out to you, this issue was brought forward to me by the Ontario School District. That's why Representative Butler is one of the sponsors of this bill. Chris Panicky over there, who is their payroll clerk, caught this. And here's the issue, in plain and simple, and as simple as I can explain it to you. And if I get it wrong, Mr. Purs, Steve Delaney will hop in and help me. But the idea was, when we created Tier 3 OPSRPS, the Oregon Public Service Retirement Plan, that your committee administrator just explained to you, we created a different system in 2003, and one that was supposed to be of less cost, and we did. The problem we created, though, however, was we created a difference in the way in which you accumulate credits from Tier 1 and Tier 2. We said, in order for you to be a full-year credit, you got to work 2,000 hours. What I've handed you is a run, the first five pages of a 24-page run from the Ontario School District that looks at individuals. And I'd like for you to take a look at page 5 of that run for me. And go down about, pick any of them. Go to Matthew Fielding, who is a full-time certified teacher in the Ontario School District, under a contract to work full-time. Mr. Gilman only accumulated 1,605 hours of time, though. And under the bill, under 238A, he would not get a full year's worth of credit, even though the employer and Mr. Gilman said, I'm a full-time employee. Here's what would happen. 25 years down the road, Mr. Gilman, who may not work at the Ontario School District, who transfers back and forth among school districts because each school district does it a little differently, he'd come to PERS and say, I'm getting ready to retire. What's my retirement going to look like? And what Mr. Delaney's staff would say to him is, you don't have 25 years of credible service because you didn't work a full 2,000 hours in each year. You got a proportionate share. And I can tell you what would happen is the school district would get sued and PERS would get sued because the contract the gentleman would have entered into was full-time employment. And to be honest with you, this is an issue of fairness. Is there going to be a little bit of a cost increase? The actuary for PERS has said, yeah, there's going to be a little bit of cost increase. And I've talked to Beth Ann Darby from the Oregon Education Association, the PERS Coalition, the employee side of this. And this is something we all agree ought to be fixed. And this is to say, we're going to make Tier 3 OPSRP, I still call it Tier 3. He's probably going to hit me upside the head for saying that. But to make it mirror Tier 1 and Tier 2. So that if you work over 600 hours, you get a full year's worth of credit. Now, people are going to say, wait a second, that's not full time. Well, that's true, but remember, we do a calculation of a benefit under a formula. And the formula is your years of service times your final average salary times a factor. And for Tier 3 or OPSRP, it's 1.5. For Tier 1 and Tier 2, it's 1.67. We're not changing that. So if you only work a portion of a year, you're only going to get paid for a portion of a year. So the formula will recognize that differential in how they calculate your final average salary. This is purely an issue of fairness. Look down that list, and you'll see folks who are principals or vice principals who are thinking they're getting a full year worth of credit, but the way that the data is gathered from PERS, they're simply not getting it. And to be honest with you, we want to avoid litigation 20-plus years down the road. We want to make sure folks who believe they're working full-time get a full-time credit and a full year's worth of credit. We're working on amendments with Mr. Delaney and Greg Hartman, who represents the PERS Coalition, to make sure we get this right because this is a very highly technical issue. If you take a look at the statutes, we want to make sure we get this right, and it's a matter of fairness for these folks. So I do appreciate you holding a hearing on the bill and holding up a work session till Monday, if I understand correct, so we can get these amendments. And at that point, everybody will have seen them. They'll be vetted out to all the attorneys involved, and we hope to have sign-off on this from everybody, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Delaney, anything to add to this?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Steve Delaney, Deputy Director for PERS. No, the board has not taken a position on this bill because it's been a relatively recent bill that's moved forward. It does fit the general standard that the board's looking for, which is to try to find simplicity to the plan because of many components of the plan. This certainly has added complexity to the plan as we've been programming our new system, and it has been difficult to explain to members, as indicated by Mr. Green's testimony. I would just say very briefly about what is the difference. We looked at the benefits under the old Tier 1, Tier 2, which is a 600 hours in actual service time for a part-timer, versus the new methodology, which was a pro rata of service time, but you gross up the salary to what they would have earned if they'd been full-time. Very complicated. Yet it produces identical benefits. There is no cost for a part-timer. The two methodologies work the same. The cost that the actuary has pointed out is for those few people that move in and out from part-time to full-time employment to their career, you can actually increase somewhat the benefit paid to them under the old methodology. And that's therefore it's a 34 basis point impact. An assumption as to how many people might be impacted. But again, for the administrative ease that it provides to the agency, we certainly would understand and look favorably upon a movement of this bill.
Yeah, thank you. I don't know what the hours are in the labor's union contract, but it ain't 2,000. You have to work so many hours before it's a full year of service, and then you have to have a minimum of 5 years, full years of service, whatever full means, before you can become vested. And I was in the union 8 years. But these hours, do they reflect extracurricular hours that teachers and public workers put in that aren't, well, I'm just going to call them billable for better? Include all that time that they put in?
Mr. Chairman, they wouldn't, unless, of course, it's what I would call an extra duty contract, because you do have some teachers who say, I'm going to be a volleyball coach, I'm going to be a track coach, and they get compensated for that. If, in fact, that's the case, then yes, it would take those in. But for those things where, and trust me, I've got friends who are principals and teachers. Right. You know, I have a friend who's a high school principal who on the day of a home football game says it's the worst day of his life because it starts at 6, they get the pep rallies and all the kids are up, everybody's up, and then they got to calm them down, get them back to class, and they got to dance afterwards. He didn't get home till 2 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. And that's if every kid's picked up from the dance on time by their parents.
Right.
No, he doesn't get compensated for that. What he gets compensated for is his normal work day, which, if you take a look at this from the Ontario School District, days in the year of the contract is 191 days. They're all working that number of days.
Mm-hmm.
And, Mr. Chairman, I would say this is simply a matter of fairness for these folks. They're working full-time. They consider themselves full-time. The district considers themselves to be full-time. But they're not getting, if you take a look where it says full year of service on that list, you can look down there and say, you know, again, the gentleman I pointed out on page 5, Mr. Gilman, you know, he worked 1,605 hours. The district considered him a full-time employee, but he's not getting a full year of service credit.
Right.
And if you look at somebody like Monica Garcia up above, who only worked 495, she still wouldn't qualify under this scenario, but she would get her benefit calculated if she did ever hit the 600 hours based on her final average salary. So you recognize the fact that somebody's not working full-time by the calculation that's put in statute on the benefit they would receive.
Well, they were working overtime when I was a kid. Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, I'm really glad this has come forward because it is more than fairness. We are facing a teacher crisis. We are heading into a period where we're going to have a hard time getting good teachers into our schools, and to have them, this isn't a very good recruiting tool as currently construed, particularly for young teachers that are having a tough enough time staying in our school system. So I think we need to address this forthwith and not wait, as they say, and have it come up as an issue that we just can't get good people. And the longer it goes on unfairly, the worse off we are.
Well, Representative, I couldn't agree with you more. And we have to make sure that their pensions are intact and not going to be messed with anywhere else besides the negotiating table. Any other questions for these fine gentlemen?
Mr. Chair, not a question, but I would just suggest, since there are a couple of members not here this morning, that the witnesses might want to make sure that they understand what we're doing.
Right. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, it's my plan for those folks who weren't here to hear this testimony that I would approach them, and also Beth Ann Darby again from the Oregon Education Association, who's now in the room, is once we see the amendments and everybody signed off on them, we think this is a good thing. We will talk to those members.
And Mr. Green, I've made it clear we want everyone arm in arm on this, and then we'll move it forward.
Mr. Chair, that is my goal.
Thank you. Beth Ann, would you like to... Ms. Darby, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Beth Ann Darby with the Oregon Education Association. I'm just here to chime in and say thank you very much for hearing this bill, and we hope that you will work it. We very much appreciate OSBA's leadership and PERS's help with constructing it, and we're very pleased to, we think this is an issue of fairness for our members, and it also provides some consistency for the PERS system so that all employees are treated the same and how they calculate their pensions.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Darby? Okay, well, thank you all
thank
very
you.
Much.
Thank you.
Would anyone else like to testify to House Bill 3451 today? All right. Seeing no one, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3451 and open the public hearing on House Bill 2478.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2478 requires that a city who wishes to establish a building inspection program have a population of at least 35,000. You actually have two sets of amendments. The proponents wish only consider the dash 2 amendment. The dash 2 amendment adds new provisions to current statute to clarify that a municipality may not assume responsibility for administering and enforcing a building inspection program unless the municipality is subject to current statute prior to the assumption or the responsibility of operating the program is being assumed from the Department of Consumer and Business Services. And it also adds an emergency clause.
Thank you. Mr. Phillips and Mr. Tiffany, if you'd like to come up and tell us what we're doing here. You're ready, guys.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Paul Phillips. I represent the National Electrical Contractors Association and the IBEW and the building trades and the plumbing and mechanical contractors on this bill. What are we doing, Mr. Chair? You asked us in February talked about this bill. This bill, we're going to set an artificial $35,000 population limit on program assumptions. You then directed me to go back and meet with a work group. Willie was part of it, Building Officials Association, Bill Cross, the building inspectors from Corvallis and Eugene, the Building Codes Division, Special Districts met. We came up with a gut and stuff. That is what we're doing today. What we would ask you to do is to adopt the Dash 2 amendments. The Dash 2 amendments essentially allow for programs, municipalities that already have programs, if they only have one part of it, to continue and adopt. If they had electrical, they could adopt plumbing. They could expand that way. But it puts a moratorium for 2 years, through 2010, for any other programs while we work on a certification program for building inspectors. And I also spoke with AsME, who represents most of these employees, too, as part of the work group. But the idea is to place on hold, get the certification going, and move the process forward in a fashion that makes sense for everybody. And I believe there's consensus and agreement among the work group. With that, I'll turn it over to Willie.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Willie Tiffany with the League of Oregon Cities. Mr. Phillips is correct. Building officials are currently engaged in a very expansive process to gain international certification on an Oregon model. It won't be the expansive international process, but it'll be modeled on that certification process to Oregon's needs. We think that'll meet the intent of the original bill, and we're ready and willing to support the Dash 2 amendments. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Estabell.
Yeah, just a question. Why 35,000?
Mr. Chair, Representative, again, Paul Phillips for the record. The 35,000 is not any longer in the bill. We took that out. That was in the original bill. I picked a number. That's why the 35,000 wasn't
okay,
the original
got it.
Bill. There is no more science than that. But it was a point to start the discussion, and in fact, it's resulted in a good discussion and a better bill.
Were there any? Oh, yes, Representative, please.
So that means that anyone that starts a building program at this point must go through the certification, which is fine. Is that correct?
That's correct, and we would hope, Representative, Mr. Chair, that those who already have programs and the two that met with us do have programs, and they want to go through the certification and increase their professional standards. And
Mr. Chair and Representative Esquivel, from our perspective, there aren't any cities under 35,000 that are interested in taking on this program that would be acceptable to the department. The good thing about this amendment is that we're trying to get those programs that exist today up to a very stringent certification level. They're doing that themselves because they want their professionals in the industry and they want to increase their professionalism. We think it's a good idea. We think that a two-year moratorium is okay for this purpose, with the exceptions that Mr. Phillips talked about.
My little town, Happy Valley, I know we did, and I don't know where they're at currently, but we had some inspection services, and then I think we shopped some out to Milwaukee and some to the county.
Right. Yeah,
and I think we've been adding on to what we do in our town, right. My city, right. As we go. Right. And the building department's growing as the city is, too. But so there aren't, like Damascus, what situation are they in right now, for example? Do you have any idea where they're building code?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I do not know.
They're probably doing, the county's probably doing everything.
Yeah.
Or they're shopping it
out.
It's
a county program.
Yeah, right, okay. Any further questions of these gentlemen? And the dash twos, we're all ready to go then, correct?
We're all ready to go on the dash twos.
All right, well, if there's no further questions, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2478, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2478. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the dash two amendments to 2478 as a pinture.
Representative Esquivel moves we adopt dash two, is it two amendments?
Dash two.
Dash two.
Amendment to House Bill 2478. Any discussion? Is there any objection? All right, you've seen one. Very good. And Representative Esquivel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move 2478 as an amendment to the House floor with a blue pass recommendation.
Representative Esquivel moves House Bill 2478 to the floor as amended with a blue pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? All right, Kristen, please.
Representative
Aye.
Representative
Aye.
Aye.
For me, the sign sheet.
Excuse
me. Excuse.
Aye.
Aye. Would anyone like to carry this on the floor?
You would.
I'll carry it. Representative Berger's assigned it to the chair. I'm close work session, House Bill 2478.
That works.
And we are going to be in recess, do I have to gavel, until 9 o'clock. Representative Clem is coming with his wonderful bill about dogs and cats. House Committee on Business and Labor. And I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3521.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 3521 allows dogs accompanied by their owners into restaurants and bars if the dog and its owner follow certain criteria.
Very good. And we have Representative Clem here. And just for the record, I love dogs. I got a dog, but I don't have a dog in this fight. Representative.
Oh. Whoa. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Brian Clem from here in Salem. And I love dogs. And I'm biased, I admit it, so I'm glad you're on the other side of the podium because you can be more rational than I can about this issue. My belief is that the businesses who want to allow dogs into their restaurants and the dog, that's probably my phone.
Hey, would you all shut off your phones and pagers and electronics, please?
So my belief is that the businesses that want to allow dogs into the restaurants, and we're not talking a very large number in the state of Oregon who would take advantage of this change in the law, but there are some. Lucky Lab would be one. Iron Mutt would be another. And the people who love their dogs and like to have them with them. You know, my dog comes to work with me, as many of you know. He sleeps next to me. He eats dinner near me. We would like to be able to have the opportunity to take our dogs into the restaurant rather than outside on the patio, which is currently the way it works. And obviously, people who don't care for dogs, they don't go to the Lucky Lab as it is. I'm quite certain of that. They will not go inside the restaurant either if the dog is inside with them. We felt it was appropriate to have standards. It certainly has to be optional for the restaurants. This is meant to be a small business, pro-small business move as well as a dog lover move. So we say the dog needs to remain on a leash, needs to remain with its owner, and needs to be well-behaved. Representative Edwards and I had talked about also making clear, either specifically or on the record, that a restaurant may choose to discriminate within breeds. And if they don't believe that pit bulls really can be well-behaved, and that's their business, then that's their right to say a sign on the thing that says no pit bulls. People love their pit bulls, but that's the small business prerogative in my view. There's really not a lot more than that. This bill got a little bit of attention, and I got a ton of emails saying, yay, dogs. And so I know there are people out there who want to take advantage of it. I know there are some businesses who, I think at least one's here to testify, who want to take advantage of it. I have not found, in my own biased mind, the public interest in prohibiting the two from conjoining. In Washington, they have a bill. I read a quote from the health department person about that, and they said, you know, it's the most minute of issues. We're not really that interested in it. I don't know what the Oregon Health Department is going to testify, but I'm sure I will find out here in a few minutes, potentially. Or maybe not. Mm-hmm. So that's my pitch. And this is OG. Just in case anybody was interested in him, he does reside in House 278 most days, and you're welcome to visit him at any time to discuss matters related to this bill or anything else. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions of the good representative? Any comments?
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
Thank you. I, too, am a proud co-sponsor of this bill, so I'd like to thank Representative Clem for bringing it forward. Obviously, I, too, am very fond of dogs. I have my dog, Tristan, here on the dais with me today. And also, I want to note that this bill has bipartisan support from its sponsors, and really thank Representative Clem for being dogged in the pursuit of this issue.
No.
One interesting note, our relating clause was found to be not allowed under the rules, but it did have, at the request of all of the dogs' names that are the proud children / pets of the co-sponsors, but it apparently broke the rules, so it was taken out.
Well, I know the representative, when he gets an idea in his mind, he's like a dog with a bone. Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, if I may, speak for all those folks who you are not hearing from, who would just as soon not be confronted with your dog, who doesn't love your dog, who doesn't think your dog is clean, beautiful, and appropriate, and who has finally gotten smoking out of restaurants, and the last thing they want is to walk in and be confronted by an animal. In a restaurant setting, we don't speak up very much, those of us who really don't like and appreciate dogs, but I think now is the time for you dog lovers to hear from us that you may love your dog, but please don't expect us to, and we would like as little contact as possible. Plus, we don't want sort of an expansion I can see the discrimination suit. That restaurant is being sued because they wouldn't let my pit bull in and he let your lab in. I just don't want to go here. I'm sorry.
And I completely respect your rights and your right to represent your district and your views. I don't think you have to go to the restaurant if you don't want to.
Mr. Chair, I need to be very careful here. I may not represent my district. My district, I have not done a district poll on dogs. I am here speaking just as one human being who rarely says what I really feel about dogs, because in our culture, dogs are, you are expected to like them. And it's just sort of a given. And for those of us who don't particularly, we rarely speak up, but I think now is a time and a place. And I may be contrary to my district. I'm sure I'm going to hear from them on this.
Sorry for bringing that part up. I mean, the other thing you're going to hear is the discussion, not necessarily applicable to this bill, but the general idea that currently there are some problems where people will have a dog, and there's confusion whether a working dog or a training dog, which definitely is allowed in a restaurant already, it gets confused, and it can set a bad image for the training dogs, and I think that's a fair point. Again, we're talking a small number of facilities that will do this. I don't know that every, you know, training dog has to be able to go to the Lucky Lab and not have any confusion between them. One little interesting factoid, I went out to the grass out here to walk my dog, and one of the grounds crew said, "Hey, I'm one of your constituents," and I said, "Oh, great." And he said, "Yeah, I heard about that dog that you've got. I think that's great." When I went to Portland, I always took my dog, and I actually faked being disabled so I could take my dog in the restaurant. I know that's illegal, but I just wanted to have it with me. So people apparently are doing this already. I think it would be better to have a law with standards than, you know, essentially people who just do it anyway. And that was a, you know, just an interesting tidbit that happened out on the lawn outside when we were doing our business out there.
Representative, I appreciate your candor and honesty. If I told every story that I know of illegality, I'd have one for every bill we hear, probably. Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Have a good one for this one, too.
Does this bill require that restaurants post that they are a dog-friendly family, or, I mean, a dog-friendly restaurant, so that folks entering before they would enter the restaurant know that there may be dogs in that restaurant?
The bill does not require that, though. Actually, that's probably a good idea.
I've got lots of good ideas.
Yeah, you could. Yeah, I'd be open to. I know that I may not get this session. I'm trying. I'm hoping, but that might be something to work on for future sessions if I can't get this moving.
I just want to clarify something. I can still have my cigar at my corner tavern, and they ain't got that out of there yet. And just for the record.
We're working on it.
Anyway, any other questions of a good representative and a good dog lover here that he is, and I appreciate your effort, Representative. I do, and I love my dog too with all my heart.
They told me not to bring the dog to the hearing as well. I wanted to, but
I had no problem with
that. No, it was the clerk. She was right. I probably shouldn't do that. But.
Any more questions of the good representative while we have him here? Okay, thank you, Brian.
All right,
I appreciate
it.
All right, I'd like to call Morgan Saffenspiel, please. Morgan, come on up with your colleague there.
Have a dog. Mr. Chair, was that colleague or collie?
Her colleague.
Retriever.
And I, for the record, my daughter was here one day, and Morgan took Marcella around and showed her how she's training this, helping train this dog for future service. So, and ma'am, I don't know your name, but both of you need to identify yourselves for the record, and then just go ahead whenever you're ready.
I am Morgan Saffenspiel. I am 14 years old, and I go to Crossland Middle School.
And I'm Joy St. Peter, and I've been a dog trainer for 10 years, and I am the director of the Joys of Living Assistance Dogs.
Okay, well, I am here because I am concerned about the House Bill 3521, and the reason why I am concerned is because I train service dogs, and they are trained to concentrate when they're in public. And the possibility that a dog could get away from its owner and walk around the restaurant, it's almost a little scary because the dog could be hostile and hurt the service dog. And it's also disappointing because we work really hard to get these dogs to concentrate, and that could easily be almost shattered because a dog wants to play. And if there's an emergency and all the dog wants to do is go play, it is very unsafe for either the blind or the person in the wheelchair. And I will be happy to answer any questions by the chair and the representatives.
Thank you, Morgan. I'm going to open questions up in a minute. Who is your partner here today?
This is Seamus. He is a golden retriever. He is part of the organization, the Joys of Living Assistance Dogs.
Uh-huh.
He is 11 and a half months old.
Yeah, great, great. Yes, ma'am.
And chair, members of the committee, thank you. My concern is...
Ma'am, you have to identify yourself for the record, please.
I'm sorry?
You have to identify yourself for the
record. Oh, Joy St. Peter, director of the Joys of Living Assistance Dogs.
Thank you.
And I've been training dogs for over 10 years, and I've got to be one of the biggest dog lovers that there is. I've got plenty of them myself. But my concern is that this is opening Pandora's box to many other things. I've seen very well-behaved dogs attack my dog. I have seen responsible dog owners on a retractable leash, and their dog is across the room peeing on a fixture. I have seen the retractable leash going across and tripping somebody, and these are responsible dog owners and well-behaved dogs. So just because this is this, you know, we say that they're well-behaved, and I have seen more pet owners not be objective about their dog's behavior, and this is over a 10-year period of time of working with dogs. And since I have, you know, started the Joys of Living, and it does pose a threat to our dogs that are out working under and well-behaved, and we look for signs, we learn how to read the dog's body language so that we can prevent a problem from happening. A lot of pet owners say, he just wants to say hi, and if you look at the body language, that is not a hello. That's a, you know what, get out of my face, or you're going to be toast. You know, and then they don't know how to read those signs, and so I see it. My concern is it's opening Pandora's box to a whole lot of other lawsuits and problems. As director, I get calls from all kinds of businesses. The city has called me. Penitentiary has called me. Businesses have called me. Moms with asthmatic children have called me and say, what do I do with people that are putting coats on their dogs, pretending to be service dogs, so they can bring their dog in? How do I deal with this? They're putting their dogs in, you know, grocery carts, and which is another health hazard. And I get probably 5 calls a month on this issue. How do I keep pets out? Mm-hmm. You know, this is my concern. This is this. And I love my dogs. I would take them everywhere, but I will not take my pets anywhere unless it's a dog park or out for a walk, you know, camping, those types of things. And I love every one of my dogs. So that's my concern.
Yeah, thank you. And I want to just thank Morgan again publicly for sharing that time generously with my daughter, explaining what you do. And she really enjoyed that, by the way. And I just want to thank both of you for your efforts. And I don't speak for Mr. Representative Clem, but I know for a fact he appreciates, I'm confident he appreciates your effort, as does everyone in this body. But I got a couple stories now, and I'm glad you're here, you know, stating a different side, because there's a different side to every story. I've taught Marcella to always ask permission, because you never know what, you don't know a dog, the owner knows that dog. But my dog Farley, he's old now, I don't even walk him at all anymore, he can barely get up the stairs, but I used to take him on walks through the park, and I always had him on a leash. And Farley likes some dogs and doesn't like others. And he's not afraid to fight. He loves to fight the ones he doesn't like. And I remember, I don't know where he learned that.
I don't get it.
There was this man with a Rottweiler not on a leash. And that dog came up to my dog, and he tore into that dog. And this dog was twice the size of my dog. And the owner comes up and starts yelling at me. Well, look, I go, look, pal. Your dog ain't on a leash and mine is. And then the second story I'm going to tell was a restaurant story too, and you opened this up. My wife was a dental hygienist for 3 years in Switzerland, and she was in a restaurant, and at 2 other tables, there was one lady with a fur coat on the back of her chair and a lady over here with her little dog, which you could take them in. Well, that little dog went over and wet all over that other lady's coat, unbeknownst to the coat owner, and Francis was just observing this, and that lady got up, put her coat on, and walked out, not knowing. Now, I don't want that happening in my restaurant. And I love dogs, for the record. I want to make it very, very clear. Would anyone else like to comment or ask these nice women any questions? Representative
Rosenbaum. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your concerns and the great work that you're doing. I don't think it would be likely that all restaurants would choose to allow dogs if this bill were to pass. It really just permits it. And another thing in the bill is that it does allow for sections to be designated as dog-friendly. And so I would think that if there were places where dogs were allowed, you probably would just avoid those places. I mean, that's one comment I had. And I guess my question would be, don't these dogs need to learn how to do their job when there are dogs around and not to be distracted?
They are trained to not focus on dogs, but dogs can get away from the dog. They're strong. And when provoked, they will play. And that's just my concern, that in the case of an emergency, the dog needs to be focusing on the person in the wheelchair or the blind person and not a free dog running around.
It does help, and it would only take one incident to take a dog out of service. It could upset a dog really bad, and then we're out of a year's worth of training, plus the money and time invested into the dog. And then also, we can't reuse that dog. We may get $500 for the sale of a pet quality dog as opposed to $3,000. That's a big hit on the company, just because of one incident of one dog not liking the other. Like you said, that happens quite a bit. And I've had my dog attacked in the Salem hospital by another service dog, well-behaved service dog. We walked in. I had my dog. The dog was in wheelchair training, so I was in the wheelchair because he has to learn how to behave in a wheelchair. The other dog came out from under the chair and attacked my dog. That's a service dog, well-behaved dog. So dogs are unpredictable, even at best, and that's a high price for us to pay.
Representative Berger, please.
Mr. Chair, if I could say that, let me repeat, dogs are unpredictable. And as someone who is wary of dogs, I probably am overstating my dislike of them. I don't understand them. I don't read their signals, and so I'm wary. But when I see a service dog that is a true service dog, I am so impressed because they are a great, valuable asset. And this young lady who's taken the time to train them, that is a wonderful program and a wonderful thing you're doing. And in the end, this dog will be a huge asset to all of us. So when I'm out and about and I see a service dog, I avoid them, but I feel safe because I know that they have been through an extensive amount of training. So I agree. I wouldn't want to jeopardize any part of this program. It's too important for too many people and too dependent on an unpredictable animal. So it's this predictability that really makes these animals acceptable out in about in restaurants and in other places. Other people's dogs, they may love them, but let them enjoy them in their homes and neighborhoods, please.
Thank
and,
you.
Yes. For the record, I mean, we love dogs. We wouldn't be doing this if we didn't, but we understand we know that they are unpredictable. Even little dogs, they can hurt when they bite, and they could easily hurt a service dog, and we're just concerned about our service dogs and the fact that the dog who could hurt the service dog might be put into the pound or could be put down if they hurt the dog, and we're just raising the concern of that.
Very good. Any questions of these nice women? Okay, well, keep up the good work, and I appreciate you coming down and letting us hear your side of the story. I really do. All right, and it's nice meeting Seamus, right?
Yes. Yeah.
All right, well, Representative Boone, would you like to come and weigh in on this?
Good, thank you.
Good. Well, come on up.
There you go.
It's right on time. Thank you for waiting for me.
All right.
For the record, my name is Deborah Boone, and I represent the Upper Left Coast, House District 32. And I'm here to testify in support of this bill. Before I became a representative, I used to have the pleasure and privilege of traveling to France and Sweden several times a year, and I miss it. But one of the most comforting things that I've had happen to me, especially in France, is going to a little small town, hill town bistros in the late evening or early evening for a snack or dinner or whatever, and sitting on a bench and having a little dog, kind of like Representative Rosenbaum's, they're usually smaller dogs, sitting next to me, and because I have dogs at home and cats, too. I have to say that for cat people. But I support this. I would probably have to say that it doesn't bother me. I know it might bother some people, but our pets have become, in many families, kind of family members more than the usual farm dogs, etc. I'm getting a look from Representative Esquivel, so I can get to your point.
My point is, I
support the bill. I don't think we're ever going to get to the inside piece other than for service dogs, but outside cafes, things like that, I don't see a problem with it. And I think it's okay. So I hope that you will support the bill.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions, Representative Boone?
We welcome dogs in Cannon Beach.
And I love dogs, too. Just for the record.
Just
once
for
again.
The record.
All right. Very good. Yes,
thank
Representative
Escobar. Just for the
record,
Representative Boone, I had a lab that lived to be 17 and a half, and I just had to put her down this last year.
Oh.
And when I first got her, she just had a big fat belly and a little tiny dog. And it was very, very difficult for me to do that. So
I have two labs. Mine's almost, he'll be 14. Hank will be 14 on May 12th. And
pretty old.
He had surgery the day before yesterday, but he's doing just fine.
Good. God bless you. All right. Well, thank you, Representative. I'd like to call Don Phillips, Sean and Rochelle Doherty. I hope I got that right. Come on up. Please.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, Don Phillips, legislative assistant on the second floor house side, part of the second floor dog lovers club. my three-year-old golden buddy gave me a big slobbery kiss on the way out the door this morning. And I'm with me today is Sean and Rochelle Doherty, who have a coffee shop down the way from my house called Iron Mutt Cafe. And it's great. They've got a little dog water bowl outside and an outside area with a chain link fence where you can kind of let them go romp around while you go get your mocha. And one of this restaurant and a couple others gave me the idea to talk to Representative Clem, because he's also in the second floor dog lovers club, when we got the idea for this legislation. So I asked the Dohertys to come down today and say a few words. But I did just kind of follow up on what Representative Rosenbaum was talking about earlier about the service dogs. I think they do need to be acclimated to a variety of situations out in the public, whether it's crossing the street or going in a restaurant or going to a public park. And the intention of the bill was to set aside special areas that would be dog-friendly zones in the restaurant. So you could choose to sit on that side or go back up where the people-only part is, kind of like the smoking, non-smoking sections. And the intent was to have a sign on the door that said, this is a dog-friendly establishment. Please, you know, come in if you want to, or choose to go somewhere else. We also got a list from a local gal who keeps track of all the dog-friendly restaurants, and there are about 20 right now in the Portland area that allow you to sit outside in their outdoor area, because it's not allowed inside right now. So it's very, very popular, and they do even travel guides and booklets, friendly, dog-friendly hotels and places like that that you can get at a variety of tourism places. So I think it's a great marketing tool, and I think there's a lot of folks out there. There's a niche, and I definitely would bring my dog, and he's very well behaved, and bring him into the restaurant while I'm snacking down. I can't tell you the look on the face while you're having breakfast, and you can see the face out in the car looking at you, like, you know, can I come in and join you? So I'm going to let the Dohertys say a few words, and thank you very much for hearing the bill this morning.
Right.
Well, good morning. My name is Sean Doherty, co-owner of Iron Mutt Coffee, and thank you for allowing us to talk this morning. Very interesting. I like the other side. I honestly didn't have a wasn't prepared for the previous speaker. So I'd like to kind of talk a little bit about some of the things that I heard when they were speaking. The stories that I heard there were, I don't think most people, restaurant owners for a nice restaurant wouldn't allow this. I think the big part is this, it gives the owners of the establishment a choice whether they want to have a dog-friendly environment or not. I think for the most part, nicer restaurants, higher-end restaurants would probably choose not to have the dogs in there. We're looking more from a casual environment. And for most people that, if you go into Portland or say, let me go buy a coffee shop, most people that are there sitting outside on a nice day have their dogs with them already. And we also have an outdoor doggy area gated in and so forth. One thing that kind of struck me about when we first had this idea of opening a dog-friendly coffee cafe is I was pitching banks and to get funding. And they would always say, oh, well, aren't you worried about dog bites? You know, dogs attacking each other. And I said, well, you know, you've got this place called Lucky Lab in Portland, and they've been around for 13 years. And I said, okay, you got alcohol and dogs. You throw a firearm in there, and you got a recipe for a riot to bust out. But not only does that not happen, they've been successful enough in 13 years to have three locations. So what it did is it supported my belief that most people will bring their dogs to a dog-friendly coffee cafe or to a bar, a dog-friendly bar, know that their dogs get along well with others. And if they don't, they don't bring them. One of our dogs, our Iron Mutt, is actually doesn't get along well with other dogs. She does not come over to our coffee shop. Our other boxer, Nate, does. So, it supported my belief that we can focus on the very few incidences, and yeah, there probably would be and will be a few incidences, or the majority, and we can choose to focus on either one of those. And for every one story we have about this happening, we could have 10,000 stories of nothing happening. So,
good. Michelle Doherty, also co-owner of Iron Mutt. And part of when we were talking about this stemmed from I lived in France for 4 years, had my boxer, the same boxer we have there. And part of what we did with two of my friends who were blind is their dogs, it's a different training than what you have here because dogs are everywhere. And I think that as things like this happen, this allows for, we have Paws to Freedom, which is a service assistant dog training, that they come to our shop once a month and they train their dogs, they quicker train wheelchair assistant dogs, and they like to come to our shop because they like to have those other dogs running around stimulating and have them still obey. So I think it has allowed, in the case of Paws to Freedom, an outlet for them to know that every Saturday that they come, there will be plenty of dogs who are not assistant dogs who are going to be rowdy and that they can train. And so I think that's one piece that is important. Also, I strongly support the idea that people need to know that it's a dog-friendly place. If you're scared of dogs, it's very obvious for us. We have a huge boxer logo. Our store is called Iron Mutt Coffee. Everyone knows that. And I think that's probably an important part of this that restaurants will post if it is or isn't in heavy areas. But certainly for us, we were a little nervous about dogs fighting. We have had nothing happen in the year that we have been there, nothing. We've had a couple dogs bark and the owners take them and put them in their car, and that's been the extent of it. So we've been very pleased with kind of our little experiment that we've had so far.
Yeah, and that's kind of, again, it kind of supports the idea that we think we're a working model. What I heard earlier was the possibilities of this, the possibilities of that. You've got a working model with Lucky Lab, and you've got a working model with Iron Mutt Coffee, at least, knock on wood. The first year we've been in business, we haven't had one incident. And again, it goes to, for me, to help support the belief that people, if dogs bark at each other, they remove them. You know, take them out of the area, they move them out of from the scene. Most people that bring their dogs to these kind of environments love their dogs and know if their dogs start to have issues, they remove them from that incident and mitigate that possibility there. So one of those things also is, it's funny, we're thinking Portland's just voted the most dog-friendly city in the nation, and we have 20% of people that buy coffee on a daily basis. We figured that we wouldn't be the first coffee shop to ever think of a dog-friendly environment, especially when you go around in Portland, dogs are out there. And there's a big, huge market. It's not just a niche. 40% of American households own dogs, and the average is 1.7. It's a lot of dogs. And so they're out and about already. And all we're asking is the opportunity, if a business like ours says, hey, you know, we'd like to cater to folks that drink coffee and own dogs and kind of sit around and have a good time with their mochas and their dogs, would that be okay? And what I've heard initially or always is it's a health issue. And I don't understand that because, for me, our dogs live in our house. They go in our kitchens, they're in their beds, they're on our couches, they're all around with us. There's nothing that the mysterious disease that they're going to contract at the coffee shop that they wouldn't, you know, have at home. And to which I've seen more out of control kids in my coffee shop than I've seen dogs outside.
Spreading germs everywhere.
Spreading germs. Go in there, grab a go-to. You know, from a health standpoint, I'd like to see a little bit more control from parents on their kids.
Good luck there.
Exactly. So at least, you know, we've got the dog leashes, so.
And Mr. Chairman, if I might just add, one of the things we contemplated with this bill is perhaps allowing, I mean, you could do it already, but allowing the restaurant or cafe owner to have liability waivers so the dog owners would sign, you know, this is my responsibility. If anything happens, I'll take full weight of this. And we got this, I don't know if Representative Clem mentioned, we got the idea from the Washington State Legislature, passed a similar law. And we thought that was a great idea, and we're always happy to steal great ideas from our neighbors to the north. So
I think it only takes effect if we pass ours in Oregon.
I think that's true, Mr. Chair.
That's another issue. No. No. That was last session with emission controls. Any questions? Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe somebody on this panel could speak to it, and if not, maybe somebody else could answer in the audience. But we're talking about passing a state law, but it sounds like we already have some of these restaurants and bars that allow dogs. So is that specifically just to Portland? but other areas don't allow that, or?
Mr. Chair and Representative Edwards, I believe it's outdoor right now, and this bill would allow indoor.
Oh, okay, so Lucky...
I think that's what it is.
So, like, Lucky Lab is just outdoor?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Correct. Yes.
Thank you.
In theory, yes. In practicality, you see a lot of dogs in a lot of establishments in Portland, so that it is illegal.
The Lucky Lab has a big covered area with picnic tables.
No.
It's actually quite nice. Any more questions of these nice people?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Not a question, but I just want to thank you for being here. And the Lucky Lab, the original one on Hawthorne, is in the district that I represent and in my neighborhood, and you're right, it does seem to work really well. And I just wanted to ask you, do you feel like it's an economic development tool for your establishment to be a dog-friendly place? It seems like there
for
might
us?
Be people who choose to come there for that reason.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. We have had people from Salem, from Vancouver, from Gresham, from Troutdale. It's been a unique experience because, we're a unique coffee shop. And that, again, goes to support that people really would love to have this. Every time I get somebody come in with a dog, it's like, God, this is a great place. We need more of these. You guys need to come over here. You guys need to have one over here. And there's a real clamoring for it. And so, yeah, absolutely.
I think you've seen the people our age. I think we're pretty representative of the dual-income, no-kid phenomenon of 30-somethings who their dogs have kind of become that part of the family. So they are taking them everywhere. The windows stay down, and the dogs end up staying in the car. And sometimes that's not the best choice for them. And so they really love the fact that they have a place they can always come, that the dogs are welcome. So absolutely. Also, dog product. We have toys, that sort of thing, which account for about 15% of our sales, which wouldn't happen in a coffee shop without that. Okay. Absolutely.
And I hope your business continues to thrive. Any further questions or comments? All right, I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Have a good day. Would anyone else like testify to House Bill 3521? Seeing none, I'm going to close the hearing on House Bill 3521, and we will stand adjourned.